State your name and prison number.
Harold Edgerton II. Prison number 210-37.
And your age, please?
46 last month.
Well, you don't look it, Edgerton. Prison life agrees with you.
Oh, no, sir. I just tried to take care of myself, sir. I feel the years even if I don't look it.
Uh-huh. Charges on which you were convicted?
Armed robbery, defrauding an insurance company.
Sentence now being served.
10 to 20 years.
You may proceed.
Having served 3 years and 7 months, and having the kind permission of Warden Halliday, I am up for parole.
Up for parole. Tonight, another in the exciting new crime series based on authentic cases actually heard by parole boards in our state prisons, reenacted here for the first time. And now, Harry Marvel.
You are about to sit in judgment on another human being's freedom, to decide whether he shall become your neighbor, your employee, perhaps your friend, or whether he shall remain where you, society, have put him, behind prison bars. For that human being is a social offender, a criminal, up for parole. The story you are about to hear is taken from the official records of Harold Edgerton II, prison number 210-37, now pleading before the parole board and before you for his freedom.
This opportunity as a privilege. For a prisoner to be able to present his case as he sees it with honesty and frankness is, in my opinion, what makes this democracy of ours strong and great. And I hope that you will accept my statement in the spirit in which it is delivered, with full frankness and the full honesty of which I am capable.
That is precisely what we're interested in.
Until 3.5 years ago, well, 4 years ago, I was a respected and, I might say in all modesty, a well-liked human being. I owned my own home, mortgage-free. I had a business. I inherited it from my father, Harold Edgerton Associates Real Estate. I had not one outstanding obligation. And I counted my friends, I think it's accurate to say, in the hundreds.
Well, these facts are all known to us, Edgerton. But what we want to know from you is, why did you, a respected, responsible, dependable family man, commit armed robbery and defraud an insurance company?
The answer, perhaps, is that I had too good a life. That life, gentlemen, can you understand it? It was fine, but it was dull.
Dull?
I know. It sounds like a schoolboy talking, but I always read the magazines, gentlemen, Time, Fortune, the story of the giants of America. They took chances. They gambled and they won. A little audacity, a little vision. This is the difference between mediocrity and greatness. Call it neurotic, if you like, but I had this drive.
Then it wasn't speculation. It wasn't business deals that got you started on this.
No, sir. Would that it were. It was something much more common, much more vulgar. It was gambling. How many times I stood at the gambling tables and watched without betting a dime. And finally, I had some excess cash. I sat down at a table, roulette, in the house of the notorious gambler, Clifford Chazen, and lost $6,000. And I got up to leave. Chazen asked me to come into his office.
Sit down, Mr. Edgerton.
Thank you.
Mr. Edgerton, I've been watching you. $6,000 is a lot of money to lose for one who's never gambled before. But I've studied up on you. You have a fine real estate business. Manner and appearance, you're everything that could be desired.
Well, just what are you getting at, sir?
How would it be if you were to pay that debt to me without an expenditure from your own pocket?
The $6,000? What are you driving at?
Just this. I speak carefully and confidentially to you, sir. Supposing one night, say tomorrow night, you had occasion to leave in your safe, the one in your inside office, securities in the amount of $6,000. And supposing quite by accident, your safe was robbed.
Go on.
Supposing 3 armed bandits were to rifle your safe tomorrow night, find those securities and make off with them. You carry insurance, don't you?
Of course, but
then the debt would be settled. The insurance company would be out some $6,000 and you won't lose a penny. It's quite simple. It's been done before.
But that's robbery, sir. Defrauding the insurance company, that's criminal.
You prefer to pay the money out of your own pocket, then suit yourself, Mr. Edgerton. It's up to you. You don't have much vision, do you, Mr. Edgerton?
What shall I say, gentlemen of the board, to explain what I did? I was weak. I was avaricious. I was grasping. I could scarcely afford the $6,000 loss. And so later that night, I called Chazen on the phone and said there would be $6,600 in railroad stocks in the safe.
You see how easy it was?
Yes.
And there you are, sir. $600.
I don't understand.
The debt was $6,000. The securities came to $6,600. The difference is yours.
Well, sir, I've got to get home.
Oh, stay a moment. You see, we aren't quite finished.
I am quite finished.
Just an idea I had, Mr. Edgerton. See what you think of it. After all, one doesn't need a gambling debt to make such an arrangement as we made last night. Suppose it was just to happen without the gambling debt, and suppose I was to offer you 30% of whatever we found in somebody else's safe the next time.
What do you mean?
Simply this. I know that you're friendly with quite a number of real estate firms. You have an idea, I'm certain, which ones keep securities in their safes. All I need to know, my organization, that is where and when and roughly how much. 70% is my share. 30% is yours.
I won't do it.
You don't have to answer right now. Why don't you think it over? Let me know what you decide in the morning, eh?
Gentlemen of the board, I should have gone to the police right then and there. I should have called a stop to the filthy business at that moment.
Why didn't you, Edgerton? That's what this board wants to know.
What can I say, sir? Men are weak. I was weak. And there was a kind of intoxication, a tremendous kind of excitement. Many would have resisted it. I couldn't.
Did you ever stop to think of your family?
Oh, yes, sir, I did. My wife, as fine a woman as man could ever have. My son, Harold Edgerton III, he bears my father's name as I do. I thought of them, and I thought, if they find out, the disgrace will ruin them, shame them. Then there were my clients, people dependent upon me, small investors. They, too, would be ruined, so I never went to the police.
And now you see the false wisdom of that decision.
Oh, yes, sir, of course. But which of us, if he thinks he sees a way out, will face the music? In Jason's gang, I was called the chief. I was the front man. He, of course, was the real power. We bought a cabin cruiser. It was docked in Lake Michigan, and after a job was over, we would meet aboard the boat, cruise out into the lake, and divide the loot. It was a magnificent ruse, our floating headquarters, for who would think to look for criminals aboard a $60,000 cruiser rigged for deep-sea fishing, a pleasure boat? And so my career as chief began.
Not bad, chief.
No, I'd say it was very good, Chisholm.
My guess is that this jewelry's worth $13,000.
Whatever you say.
Oh, whatever you say, chief. I think the next thing you're going to say is the vault at the Farmer's Realty.
It was the most efficient operation I had ever seen. The Farmer's Realty. The take, $22,000.
Oh, I think, Chief, a private home on the north side. Maybe the Griffith Mansion.
Oh, this has got to stop, Jason.
We never use the same pattern, do we, Chief? Robbery today, a heist in a bank tomorrow, job in a private home the next day? That's your idea, isn't it, Chief?
I won't do it. Tom Griffith is a friend of mine.
It's friendlier with friends.
I went along with you. 2-3 jobs, but when is it going to stop? I tell you, I won't do it, Chazen.
What I've got on you, Edgerton, you'll do it.
I was trapped, hopelessly trapped. And then Chazen put forth the next step.
We understand each other?
Do we have to?
We have to, Chief. This is the finest insurance in the world.
Just be sure you do it right.
Oh, Harold, it was a lovely play. A lovely evening. Didn't you adore the music?
Yes, that was fine, Helen.
Come in the living room, darling. Let's have a drink. Harold, my picture. The safe is...
Oh, no, no.
Oh, your papers. The bonds. My earrings, my necklace. Harold, this is horrible.
Sit down, my dear. I'll handle this. Give me the police immediately.
Oh.
Hello? Hello, police? My house has been robbed. I thought, gentlemen of the board, that with the robbery of my own home, I had reached the lowest point in my life.
Yes, Edgerton?
And I found, gentlemen, that I had not. Heaven help me, it was only the beginning. What, you may ask, can be more heinous than defrauding an insurance company? Armed robbery of a friend's home and then robbing your own home. And I answer, gentlemen, what I did next.
What are you saying?
I mean murder, sir. Cold, brutal, calculated murder.
We will return to our file in just a moment. But first, the king of the cowboys, Gene Autry, will be riding high with song and western drama on CBS again tomorrow night. And Vaughn Monroe's Caravan will also be riding along with the five top tunes of the week, plus favorites of another college fraternity. The Gene Autry Show and Vaughn Monroe's Caravan are regular Saturday features of most of these same CBS stations. Back to the true story of Harold Edgerton II, the prison case number 210-37. The man who is up for parole.
All right now, Edgerton, you've made a shocking statement to this board. You said the next step in your career was murder.
Yes, sir.
Just a moment now. You were never charged with murder?
No, sir,
I was
not.
What are you saying? What are you trying to tell this board?
I'm saying, sir, that I might as well have been charged with murder. Because I... In my own mind, that's what I committed. Murder. It began with the biggest haul in the gang's existence. It began, as everything did, with Chazen. He had me call the gang together on the boat.
All right, now. Absolute quiet. Absolute attention. Chief will explain the plan. Floor is yours, Chief.
Well, the building is the Mercantile Trust at South and at 7th.
What's the matter, Chief?
What is it?
Yeah, you better go on, Chazen.
Chief isn't feeling too good. Just sit back and take it easy, Chief. Stop me if I say anything wrong, okay?
Okay.
Can I get you something? Maybe an aspirin?
You'll be all right. Just listen. This time it's going to be the top 15 floors of the entire building. No more once suite jobs. 15 floors.
Wow.
That's right. Wow. The chief cooks up a plan. It's a plan. At 11 o'clock at night, there are 8 people in the building. 6 cleaning women, 1 elevator operator, 1 guard. The guard is about 65. They call him Pop.
Yeah, he'll be a safe. Gotcha.
Now, at 1:05, the 6 cleaning women leave. And all that's left is...
The operator and Pop.
Right. The operator goes off duty at 2 a.m. Before he does regularly... Check me on this, Chief. He brings a container of coffee for Pop, who's the only man in the building after 2 a.m.
That's correct.
Now, if there was something in the coffee... Say, maybe a pill or something.
Gotcha. That's terrific. How you feeling now, Chief?
I'm all right.
But you'll be a lot better when the job's done, won't you?
That's right.
Okay, we do it. We meet back here in the boat at 3:20. Job's done. The boat kicks off. Did I get everything right, Chief?
Fine, Chief. Just fine.
Hey, Pop. Here's the office. Here's the coffee.
Yes, I'm sure.
Well, I'm knocking off. Tough day. See that nobody walks off of the building, eh, Pop?
He's out like a light, Jason.
You'll be sleeping till tomorrow noon.
All right, Tony. Come on, let's go.
cops allowed.
Let them make all the noise they want, Tony. This place belongs to us. Did you get the 31st floor?
Yeah, got it.
Okay. Tony, get them going on 27 now.
Right.
27th floor, securities.
Floor, 12,000.
You been able to figure how much?
Where do we get to the boat, Tony? Don't count your chickens here in the elevator.
Job keeps as well as this. Nothing to worry about.
Look at Pop. Asleep like a baby. Good night, Pop.
Yeah, he'll read about it in the papers tomorrow. Now let's get back to the boat.
Three o'clock. I hope this doesn't grow into a real storm.
What are you worried about, Edgerton?
The wind is blowing and the rain. It's a dreadful night to be out on the water.
Buy yourself a drink. Ought to be right to catch the news now, and we ought to be on it.
I hope Tony's all right. I sent him out on deck to get some air. He's awful seasick.
Here he comes.
The embassy announced tonight, and that's the news on the international scene. And now at home. Police have just announced one of the most daring robberies in the history of the city.
There it is.
14 offices in the Mercantile Trust building were stripped between the hours of 2 and 3 a.m. this morning of jewelry, merchandise, and securities estimated at $600,000.
They're wrong. This stuff is worth $1 million.
Police were checking an important clue at the local airports, which indicated the band of robbers had left the city by plane. An early arrest is expected. And in Washington today, the Senate announced...
Yes, sirree. An arrest is expected shortly at the airport. Great. You ever see anything like it in your life? We made history.
Tony in here, Chief.
Oh, I sent him out on deck a few minutes ago. Isn't he out there?
He's on the boat. I looked all over.
Is it blowing badly?
Yeah, the wind's up.
Stop worrying. He'll show up.
Well, could he fall over, maybe?
That's what happened. Stop the engine. Tony's gone over. We got to find him.
You'll get out of here.
Me?
That's right, you. And don't stop the engine.
Yeah, but the Chief...
You heard me outside.
What's the matter with you, Chasen? A man falls overboard. What are you going to do? Just go off
That's
and...
That's right. Forget about him. What do you think I'm going to do? Start shining searchlights on the water at 3 a.m?
But we can't let him drown.
No, we can just get ourselves picked up by the Coast Guard or the police patrol.
That's murder, Chasen.
Do me a favor, Edgerton. Forget the morality. It doesn't become you.
Gentlemen, as clearly as if I had put a gun to that boy's head and pulled the trigger, I murdered him. He was a decent kid. A robber, yes, but a decent person.
It was shortly after that that you were picked up.
That's right, sir. It was about a month later. How I lived during that month, what rationalizations and justifications I gave to myself, it's impossible to describe. But I hoped what happened would happen.
Did you be arrested?
Yes, sir. Tony's body was washed ashore, and he was tied in with Chasen. A stool pigeon did that. As you know, Chasen was the first member of the gang arrested, and for whatever reasons, I can't presume to know what goes on inside the mind of a man like Chasen, but he kept his mouth shut about my connection with the operation. Then they found Tony's hat.
Inside the hat band, a phone number.
That's correct, sir. My private number, in case he got into trouble. Gentlemen, when the arresting officers came, I knew relief for the first time in the many months I had been part of Chasen's gang. And in the years that followed, these years here in prison, I spent that time atoning for the many guilts which I freely admit. The guilt of my wife, my son, my daughter, my clients, to Tony, to society.
That's how it happened.
Yes, sir. Now, if you like, if it pleases the board, I would like to make one final statement. I'm reluctant to do this, but...
Well, what is it, Edgerton?
I want to read a letter from my wife, sir.
You may read it.
Dear Harold, at the time of the trial, when I learned for the first time that you were involved in those terrible things, you know how shocked I was. That a gentle, generous, fine man like yourself could have this side to his character. Shall I continue, gentlemen?
Yes, finish the letter, please.
But now I've had time to think, and I begin to understand how such a thing is possible. Let me tell you now, my darling, for your own peace of mind. When you come out, and I know no parole board in the land will ask you to serve your full term when they have heard your story, then when you come out, my darling, we shall be waiting. Helen, Harold III, and Ellen. That's all, gentlemen.
You were a victim then, Edgerton, of human frailty. Ordinary human weakness. Is that what we're to understand?
I tried to say it as honestly as I knew how, sir.
Having made the initial error of involvement with Chazen, you became his victim, his tool. And the rest flowed logically from this terrible premise?
I would like not to repeat myself, sir. That is what happened.
As you're well aware, there's another inmate inside this prison, well known to you. Clifford Chazen.
Yes, sir, I know.
It's known to this board that you have, during your imprisonment, stayed away from Chazen. Never exchanged a word with him in the past 3.5 years.
I tried my best, sir.
I'm going to take a liberty with the normal procedure of this board and bring this man into the hearing. Guard, show Chazen in.
I want to caution you, sir. This man is a fantastic liar.
Over there, Chazen. Next to the chairman.
Chazen, you're aware that you were picked up in connection with the mercantile trust theft on the word of a stool pigeon?
That's right.
You're also aware, probably by now, of the name of that stool pigeon.
That's right. Freddy Galanti from Detroit.
Let me add to your store of information, Chazen. The name of the man who informed on you was Harold Edgerton II.
What?
That's a lie.
Silence! The question is addressed to you, answer. Otherwise, absolute silence. Now, Chazen, who masterminded the gang? Whose gang was it? Who, in fact, was the chief?
So you stole on me. You're the one. All these years I kept my mouth shut. All these years. What have you been telling him? All right, I'll tell him. Sure, in the beginning I brought him into the organization. But after that it was his idea. Every safe job, every stick up, every house we knocked over, he cased them. He planned them. What's he been telling you?
I have said my piece, gentlemen.
Did you tell him about knocking over your own house? Did you tell him how you wanted one of the boys to do it while your wife was there to make it look more authentic? To knock her down, rough her up, maybe break her arm? Did you tell him that?
The man's a pathological liar.
Did you tell him how you killed Tony? Did you tell him how when he fell overboard I wanted to search for him, even if it was risky? Not what you said?
No. Tell them what I said, Chazen.
You said, what's one death when you're making history? That's what you said, well,
not another word, either of you. Now, one last question. Harold Edgerton, what have you to say to all this?
Will you keep him quiet, sir?
He'll be quiet. Guard, stand by this man. All right, proceed.
Gentlemen, this man standing here with me is one of the most cunning and desperate criminals I have ever met. You've just tasted a sample of his pathological lying. Of course I informed on him. I would do it again. He killed a man. Let me inform on him once more. Gentlemen, there is a prison break planned in this institution. Clifford Chazen planned that prison break.
Well, silence!
Special.
Silence! Are you finished, Adjutant?
Not quite, sir. I wish only to remind you that I was someone who felt the need for excitement and got involved terribly and desperately over my head. I did what I did out of fear and because I was a dupe. But if in your wisdom, gentlemen, you see fit to return me to society, I can only say that I believe I have learned my lesson. Let me go back to my family. My guilt will always be with me.
All right, Edgerton. Board will decide your case. Step outside with a guard.
While Harold Edgerton II waits and the parole board reviews his history, you too have a decision to make. In a moment, you can compare your decision with that of the actual parole board before which he appeared.
Music. that amiable redhead Arthur Godfrey's got words and music aplenty for you every Saturday night when he rings up the curtain on another edition of the Arthur Godfrey Digest. Here's your chance to hear the music and merriment you may have missed on Godfrey's five-a-week CBS daytime show. Here's your chance to meet once again those special Godfrey guests. Here's your chance to enjoy a full 30 minutes with America's favorite ukulele player and commentator on things and stuff. That's the Arthur Godfrey Digest, every Saturday night over most of these same CBS stations.
Now, the decision of the parole board in the case of Harold Edgerton II, prison number 210-37.
Edgerton, step out of that light. I want to see your face as I talk to you.
Yes, sir. This all right?
I have sat on parole boards for 19 years. In that long period of intense experience, I have met many hardened men. I've listened to men who boasted of stealing from the poor, petty racketeers. I've heard from men who vandalized whole neighborhoods, beat their own families, their fathers, sisters, mothers. I can recall nearly two decades of lies and deceptions and cruelty. But never in my time have I sat and listened to a man so thoroughly corrupt, so utterly, viscerally dishonest as yourself.
Sir,
I want silence. Yes, I've seen men con others out of their life savings, but I have never seen an individual attempt so loud, so vulgar a job of confidence as you've tried before this board.
I only meant
To try to con a parole board. Hardly a single word of what you said was truth. It was you who planned the robberies, every one of them. It was you who was the chief, the brains. You who let Tony die. You who dared to introduce a letter here from your wife, a letter written, this board will knows, over 2 years ago and since disowned. Your wife has divorced you, Edgerton. Your children disown you. And yet you have the incredible effrontery to stand before this board and urge that we grant you clemency based on a fraud. You informed on your own henchman, Jason. You denounced him as a pathological liar, and you blandly tell us that he is planning a prison break. You are planning the prison break. You, Edgerton. We have information from the grapevine, and we know. You've done yourself an incredible disservice. Had you told us the truth as it happened, this board might have been inclined to listen to you. But now, knowing you, I can tell you that you shall not appear before a parole board in this state until such time as you've served your minimum prison sentence of 10 years. I'm sorry you've learned nothing from 3.5 years of incarceration. Parole denied. Next case.
Harold Edgerton II is still in prison, and he will be there for many years to come, as will any prisoner who attempts to peddle a lie to a parole board. We have told his story tonight so that all may understand the extremely difficult and crucial tasks parole boards of this nation face. And we have told it in the interest of the thousands of men and women in American prisons who may themselves someday be up for parole.
You have been listening to Up for Parole with Bernard Lenro as Harold Edgerton and Santos Ortega as Clifford Chasen, written by Arnold Pearl and produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Research by Wally Gould. Music was under the direction of Harry Salter. Listen again at this same time next week when CBS will bring you the actual story of prison case number 13033-B. Up for Parole. This is CBS, where you play Sing It Again every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.